Another day, another much anticipated matchup between the Canucks and an Eastern Canadian rival. It is the Canucks Hour here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, joined by my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drantz, who is in Ottawa, ready to cover tonight's titanic matchup between the Canucks and the Senators. You can read Drantz's work at covering the team at The Athletic as well. Go ahead.
Titanic, because it's heading straight toward an iceberg. Are you going to let me go? Are you going to let me go, Jamie?
Which team is the Titanic and which team is the iceberg? I don't know. They're like, it's as if there were two Titanics racing towards two separate icebergs.
Or the fact that the Titanic is a big ship, right? It can fit both teams.
That's right. Yes. There's room, plenty of room for all of them.
All I'm saying is do not let go, man. Do not let go. You're lying on the door. You're not making space for me. The water is cold. Do not let go.
I'm not even trying to lift you up onto the door for some reason. I don't know. That's not an option.
So selfish.
Not really explained why that's not an option, but we're not going to try it. Yeah, that's me, Drantz. I'm like, hey, man, you're being a hero, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, and if you throw like generations worth of family wealth and a priceless artifact off a boat at the end of this show, I'm going to be really mad. Going to be cheesed.
Yeah, not a good move. Not a good move. I would be upset with myself as well if I chose to do that. Canucks Hour is brought to you.
That's like the Canucks and the Senators with assets.
Just throwing them away willy-nilly. Canucks Hour is brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Being a champion takes foresight. Build your company to win for years to come with fuel-efficient and reliable Kubota skid steers, excavators, and loaders from Avenue Machinery. Visit avenuemachinery.ca. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The smart alternative, visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. And as you know, if you didn't know already, you could probably figure out by the silliness off the top of the show. Yeah, this matchup, another one between teams that aren't going anywhere this year and another one that does not have really any significance whatsoever in the standings, except as it might concern lottery odds at the end of the year. Because again, that is what that's where these teams are headed, right? They are not going, there's no miracle playoff push coming for either the Canucks or the Senators. They're the only relevance the standings has for either of these two teams.
So yeah, negative.
I know. And
negative.
And obviously, Drantzer, that's why the Canucks haven't been able to win more games.
Saboteur.
We'll leave that.
Saboteur.
We'll leave that conversation for another time. But look, we will get you set up for tonight's game against Ottawa and the Canucks. Same lineup as Montreal. Thatcher Demko back in the crease for the Canucks as well. And, I mean, really, the question for me is, you know, can the Canucks' young upstart bottom six player, Elias Pettersson, make a claim for some more ice time here? You know, pretty impressive in that game against Montreal. Maybe it's finally time to reward this guy with some more time on ice.
Well, we'll see. If he is going, if he's working the way he did against Montreal, then it's only a matter of time. And, you know, I wrote that Pettersson piece at The Athletic a couple days ago, and we discussed it at length on the show yesterday. And I got a really interesting note from a very high-level Canadian rower. And they told me that what they thought I described is something called the time-off effect that some high-end athletes go through. And they described it to me like this. Like, when you are a high-functioning athlete and you're doing the work and things are going well for you in your career, right, you are working at just like 150% capacity in terms of human potential,
yeah,
without even knowing it, because it's not easy. It's just that you're in that rhythm, right? And when you get hurt and you have to take time to rehab and you're away from that environment for a while, you come back and you're an athlete who prides yourself on your work rate, but you've forgotten. Your brain just forgets once it gets out of that rhythm how hard it is. And it's hard to tell you that you're not working at 100%. Because you're a proud athlete who thinks you're working really hard, but your brain isn't quite clicking in to how hard you were working before. You've actually forgotten on a muscle memory capacity how hard it is. And, you know, they sort of read the story and they said, I wonder if that's it. And I just thought that was an interesting note, a really interesting piece of feedback on my piece that I wrote and our conversation yesterday. Just wanted to share it because I thought from a, you know, elite athlete's perspective, the fact that the article resonated and made them remember their own experience with what was a rib injury. I just thought that was a fascinating bit of insight into perhaps one of the factors underlying what we've seen from Pettersson to this point.
And you know what that really drives home to me, Dranther, is there's still so much that we, first of all, I would say we kind of outside, you know, we cover elite athletes, but obviously we certainly aren't ourselves, and we're kind of outside the day-to-day of what they do. The general public.
Negative.
Yes, I know. But there's so much we still don't understand and don't know about elite athletic performance, and also just how fragile it is to be operating at that level, and how difficult it is to sustain that level, right, of absolute greatness and operating at the pinnacle of your powers for an extended time. And look, that conversation goes well beyond just what's happening with the Canucks and with Elias Pettersson on the ice right now, but it's a good reminder that being that kind of elite athlete, it's an extremely complex, tricky, difficult thing to navigate, and there's still so much we're learning and so much we have yet to understand about that process.
Yeah, you're right. It's a complicated process. Human performance is one of the most difficult things to work through and figure out, and I think it's a big question for this organization right now, like something that really needs to be addressed as we watch Braden Holtby destroy everything, like lay waste in Dallas, right? Three huge saves late. Credits Thatcher Demko with teaching him some of the panic cross-crease movement that he used to, you know, shut down and seal the victory against Carolina. As Nate Schmidt becomes the Nate Schmidt that was advertised when he was acquired by the Canucks, like point-per-game guy, you know, just destroying it. You know, Chris Tanev, two of the best seasons of his career now, back to back in Calgary. He still watches Canucks games, by the way. Still watches Canucks games. I had a lengthy chat with Quinn Hughes after his availability about this. He says he hears from him all the time. You know, we all know what Tyler Toffoli did last season. We're all watching what Jacob Markstrom's doing last season. Like, we've seen all these guys go elsewhere and hit a new level of performance. And here's the one that really drives it home for me, Jamie, is the Canucks, I thought, did really well to assemble an absolute embarrassment of talent at the American League level. And there's a variety of things that have not gone quite right for that team that are outside their control, including some of their players having to vacate their temporary housing because of flooding, right? I mean, this Abbotsford Canucks team is still going to make the playoffs. Like, they're still going to be a really good American League team over the balance. I do believe that. There's just too much talent there. But, you know, there's something like 24th, 25th in point percentage at this point in the American Hockey League season with one of the highest budgets. Sound familiar? Does that sound familiar to you? Do you know who the best team in the American League is right now?
Who?
It's the Utica Comets.
There you go.
It's the Vancouver Canucks' former affiliate. They're 15-1. They're 15-1. Like, throw the Utica Comets, throw the American League franchise on the list of players or people who are performing at a higher level away from this organization right now. And that, to me, does sort of suggest that, you know, beyond the fact that we have talked about the construction issues on this roster, we've talked about coaching, we've talked about systems, we've talked about bets and asset management and cap management and how expensive the blue line is considering it's one of the worst in the NHL. Like, we've talked about all of those hockey things all the time, but there is this intangible level of performance where, you know, to some extent, too, it is a manager's job. It is an organization's job to get the best out of their people. And that applies to executives. That applies to coaches. That applies to the American League team. That applies to the players on the roster. That applies to Pettersson and Besser. And right now, almost across the board, it feels like no one is their best selves in a Canucks uniform. And I think that's another big question that as this club looks to chart its long-term future needs to be asked in a very blunt and frank way. Like, why are we not getting the best out of anyone who comes through?
And when, again, we're in this waiting period where we expect big changes to be coming. We'll talk a little bit about that throughout the course of the show. And, you know, let's say the Canucks do make a move at the top of the hockey operations department. Whenever the new person comes in, there's going to be a lot of discussion about, first of all, their record as a hockey executive and what kind of trades have they made, what kind of draft picks have they made. And then there's going to be a lot of talk about, okay, who should they move from this roster? What kind of strategy rebuilding the roster should they have? We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But you're right that a huge part of it, more than the trades they make and what kind of draft picks they make and all of that. A big part of it is just going to be, we can't have people consistently failing to meet their potential. And that's a big part of the story this year, right? And it's not the only part by any stretch, because as we've discussed at length, and as you said, this is still a very, very flawed roster. But you also have to look up and down the lineup and see that, you know, the vast majority of the team are not playing to their potential. That is going to be one of the top jobs for whoever comes in, to find a way to reverse that process. And it's an extremely complicated question, I think. I don't think there's one obvious answer, right? And I think, you know, part of it is there's a snowball effect, right, where people aren't playing to their potential, so you lose games. That makes people uninvested. It's harder to all pull in the same direction. It's harder to pull out of it. There is a snowball effect to it, but it's beyond just that. And as I said, whoever comes in and whoever is going to be setting the new direction of this team, that's going to be a massive part about what they have to answer, what they have to figure out for this team. How do we get the most out of the people we have? Yeah, you're going to have to shuffle the bodies around. There's no doubt about that, right? It's not as if a new GM is going to come in and have an incredible sports psychology breakthrough and all of a sudden this is going to be a Stanley Cup contending roster. But even when you make those changes, you got to find a way to get the most out of what you have in-house. And that's something that's going to bear monitoring, not just, you know, for the rest of this season, but going forward for the future of this Canucks franchise. It's going to have a massive impact. 650, lots of great texts coming in. We'll get to them throughout the course of the show, but I do want to turn our attention a little bit towards this game with Ottawa tonight. First, before we get to that, just not a lineup update for tonight, but you did get a Travis Hamonic update from Travis Green after the game day skate today, Drancer. What's the latest on Hamonic's status?
Well, it's an illness, and I was asking around yesterday because obviously my spidey senses were tingling, going off a little bit, the Peter tingle, and I was told basically like just an illness, like just, you know, there honestly there's not a ton here. And so he was supposed to join the team in Montreal. Clearly that didn't happen. The explanation is illness, and you know, Travis Green also confirmed that at this point Travis Hamonic now carries the status of a fully vaccinated player under the NHL protocols. You know, which makes sense with the overall timeline as illuminated by Jim Benning and his availability about 12 days ago. So the Canucks are now 100% vaccinated. I'm reading between the lines of that story, or will be anyway, once Hamonic rejoins the 23-man roster. And I'd assume that we'll see him on the upcoming homestand and through the month of December. He's only played 3 games for the club, and the defense has been an issue. So I do think that he can help. It will probably help the team a lot, too, to have some consistency in terms of the personnel playing day to day.
You would think so. Now, having said that, you know, we mentioned on the show yesterday, Luke Shen's been playing pretty well, right, over the last few games. And this, the partnership between Hughes and Shen is working all right. You know, it's not, we don't want to overstate things here. It's not incredible, right? They're not all of a sudden, you know, looking like a bona fide top pair on a Stanley Cup team or anything like that. But Shen's been giving them good minutes. You know, they want to get Hamonic back in the lineup as soon as possible, right? Because they look, they re-signed him this year. They obviously have a lot of belief in him and what he can provide to the lineup. But it doesn't feel like Shen should be the guy coming out. I feel like what will happen is that Kyle Burrows will be the guy who comes out. That's just the natural move. But is there a case to be made that Travis Hamonic could draw in and Tucker Poolman could come out of a lineup for a game or two?
I mean, I would think so. I wonder if the inclination, like the first choice, might be to put Shen on the left side. But if Shen and Hughes continue to look as good together as they have, or certainly as they did in Montreal, but as they have since they got put together ahead of that Columbus game, like those have been 3 of Vancouver's best 5-on-5 performances of the season, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the overall look of it is, you know, for me, honestly, I think Poolman would be the guy I'd take out, particularly because I don't have a particular appetite to see how Tucker Poolman's puck skills play on his offside, right? I mean, if you're putting Hamonic back in, of the 6 Canucks defensemen right now, like, isn't Poolman the guy who would come out on merit?
On merit, probably.
Would you disagree with that?
No, on merit, I think that's right. And that is, I mean, we've talked a lot about the Tucker Poolman contract, right? But that's a tough assessment at this point of the season, right? When he still has, you know, however many hundreds of games left on that deal, 3 years beyond this one. I don't expect it to happen, but you're right. Purely on merit, that might be the way to go with Travis Hamonic.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And, you know, oftentimes in a team environment, right, you will have a team will be enough on the same page that because of the investment that the club has made in Pullman, a misguided investment, the overall decision would be made to do something with the long view in mind. But when you do have sort of a breakdown, like the Canucks are dealing with in terms of overall autonomy and organizational dialogue, I do sort of wonder, too, if long-term considerations are, you know, less like pressing, are less decisive in shaping the roster decisions that this club will face when they return from the road and have their full battery of defensive options available to them. So we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. Hopefully Hamonic feels better soon and can rejoin the group. But when he does, there is a tough decision coming. And I do sort of wonder if it could be Canucks number five, Tucker Pullman, who ends up being the first guy to draw out.
And it's just, as you said, when you don't have alignment and harmony necessarily between all levels of the organization. And in this instance, that's just because everyone's got to be looking over their shoulder, right? Everyone's got to be waiting to see what's going to happen, questioning their job security. It's hard to all get on the same page and make these kind of really difficult decisions that, you know, again, not massively impactful necessarily from an on-ice perspective, but because of the contract status of the players involved, it is a delicate situation, right? And again, the Canucks organization is just in a position right now where it's hard to tackle those kinds of questions. Looking at this game against Ottawa, and look, we set it up when they played the Habs the other night. Ottawa's not a good team, right? This is another matchup between two teams at the bottom of the standings, two teams that do not have inspiring, to say the least, underlying profiles. Ottawa is a bottom five team in terms of expected goal share. Now, they've dealt with COVID issues, they've dealt with injuries, but there's not a lot for the center just to hold their hat on, right? Goaltending has really hurt them. They put Matt Murray on waivers, but Philip Gustafson, Anton Forsberg, they haven't been any great shakes either. So you look at this, I mean, if you look, we talked about the game in Montreal on Monday being a pretty light affair. Let's put it that way. It's trending that way in Ottawa tonight, I would think as well.
Well, the storyline to watch for is Adam Gaudette finally playing his first game against this team, right? He took line rushes between Zach Sanford and Alex Fomenton. I'm a big Fomenton guy. He kind of reminds me of young Kessler, where it was like all speed and no hands, like before Kessler figured out his wrist shot and figured out how to be a dervish at the net front. I really like Fomenton. I really like Zach Sanford too. A little turnover prone, a little giveaway prone, but he's a big assertive forward. Like, that's a good spot. That's a nice spot for Gaudette. He's got a shot here. And, you know, what's the reaction going to be considering how his tenure ended in Vancouver from the Canucks players? Like, I mean, I'm not saying to expect something, but I am going to be interested to watch it. That's certainly going to be something where I take my eyes off Nathan MacKinnon's return in Toronto on my Sportsnet Now app in the press box and actually look at the game I'm covering because I do think that's an interesting subplot here. And, you know, I think, look, Ottawa's been really disappointing this year, really disappointing. They expected to take a step. I don't think they expected to be a playoff team, not like the Canucks, but they expected to take a step and it hasn't happened. And they've had a massive COVID outbreak. I don't think the COVID outbreak was nothing by any means. Like, that was a tough go. And so, you know, things have unfolded for them in a way they wouldn't have wanted, clearly. But there is talent here. And, you know, you look at that blue line, for example, and you've got Shabbat, you've got Zub, you've got Holden, you've got Zaitsev, that Lassie Thompson kid would be like, we would be over the moon in our coverage of Lassie Thompson if he was the Vancouver Canucks prospect, right? Like, he's looked really good in a limited stint in his end. Like, they have the edge on the blue line. Even this team has the edge on the blue line. They're going to be able to move the puck better than Vancouver. So, you know, don't count them out. Like, this is going to be a tough game for Vancouver. There are no easy wins for this Canucks team.
Oh, no.
There are no easy wins. And this game, you know, is instructive on that as well.
And yeah, they've got some, you know, they have dangerous players up front, right? Drake Batherson is having a really good year. Josh Norris is having a nice season. Brady Tkachuk is always dangerous. He might be a little extra ticked off.
Watching Brady Tkachuk.
He's a great player. Fantastic player. And yeah, I mean, he's recovering from the biting incident with Brendan Lemieux, but he'll be good to go tonight. So there, look, again, this team is not. Go ahead.
I just love me some Brady Tkachuk. And by the way, I told Quinn Hughes that, and he told me never to mention that to Brady. But I love me some Brady Tkachuk. I love the way he plays. I love the emotion. I loved the blockhead comments. Like, there's something about watching Brady Tkachuk play that I actually just really enjoy. Like quietly one of my 5 or 10 favorite players to watch play the game in this league. And if he, you know, I think it's only a matter of time before his finish. Like, the thing about Brady Tkachuk is he's going to get a lot of shots, and he's going to get a lot of shots from in tight.
Yep.
He doesn't finish. Like, he doesn't convert. He's not a very efficient finisher at this point in his career. But I do think that's going to come at some point, even if it's just luck over a run of seasons. Like, it's going to come. He just generates too much he generates too much volume in terms of dangerous looking shots. You know, it's only a matter of time before he breaks through.
A dangerous player, no doubt about it. As you said, you know, you can look at the standings and see where Ottawa is, but there is talent here. Now, we said off the top, look, this does not mean anything in terms of, you know, either team trying to turn their season around or get back in the playoff race. But I think what a lot of fans want to know and might be concerned about is, okay, they won in Montreal. Let's say the Canucks do find a way to string back-to-back wins together for the first time in forever and get 2 points here tonight in Ottawa. Does those 2 wins in a row against very weak competition on the road, does that do anything to change a potential timeline for when we might see changes with this organization, which we've all been waiting weeks now at this point? Is there any danger or any reality to the idea that 2 wins in a row, you know, might stave off some of those changes?
It shouldn't. It shouldn't.
It absolutely shouldn't. It absolutely shouldn't.
Could it? I mean, all bets are off. Like, all bets are off. I don't think we have a really good sense of what's going on. I mean, it's wild that it's persisted to this point. It's wild that it's persisted to this point without official clarity of any kind from the ownership suite, right? You know, Jim Benning did speak to the media 10 days ago, right before this road trip, but, you know, he doesn't really have the weight right now, or the perceived weight, both in the Vancouver market and within the league, to properly settle things, right? I mean, even the answer that he gave on Travis Green, they were exploring everything, right?
Yep.
It was more than anything, uncertainty is characterizing the day-to-day function, speculation, conversation around this team right now. And I think that's fair. I think that's right. And so, you know, could they, you know, decide to stick with the head coach, for example, if they win tonight, for a little bit longer, as opposed to making a change? Maybe. I certainly think we're not expecting a change in the general manager's suite at any time, you know, rapidly. Like, we're not, I don't think that feels like it's on the horizon. So, I mean, maybe on the distant horizon, but
right,
not, you know, a this week kind of storyline. Does that change if they beat Montreal and Ottawa? Like, boy, should it not. Boy, should that not matter at all, in terms of this team being honest with themselves about who they are, which certainly is not a good team that's a bounce or two away from being 500. They are not good enough, clearly, as anyone watching them can see, as anyone who pays attention to, you know, the analytics can see too. So, you know, while their 5-on-5 form's been fine, while the work rate is still there, like, you know, there's a ton of moral victories you can take if you really want to spin it that way. There's so much going on that is, you know, in clear need of more than a little bit of spit shine, Jamie.
Yes.
And the idea that a win against Ottawa on the heels of a win against Montreal should change our perception of that, I mean, that doesn't pass a sniff test for anyone in this market, right?
No. And I understand the concern from the, you know, significant group of fans that do desperately want to see changes. I do understand the concern, right? Because, look, we haven't seen it. And, okay, is it possible that they're just looking for any excuse not to make the changes? It does feel different. This moment feels different to me. One, because we have heard so much reporting and a lot of it very detailed about, okay, Canucks ownership are doing their due diligence. The wheels are in motion. The process has started, right? Once that process has started, I think you're less likely to slow it down or stop it just because of a couple of wins. Doesn't mean it's impossible, but I think it's less likely. The other thing for me is, and this is something you and I have mentioned several times already this year, Drancer, right? The specter of what the atmosphere at Rogers Arena on Saturday is going to be, right? And we talked about this when they were on the road and before they turned that to start the season, before they turned that road trip around, you know, you made the point, hey, that home opener against Minnesota, it should be a really celebratory atmosphere, but if the team is limping home from the road, it could turn ugly, right? Didn't. They managed to salvage that one. They managed to stave it off. Then we saw after they came back from that disastrous three-game road trip where they got perforated on the road against Vegas and Colorado and Anaheim.
Perforated.
There you go. I stole your thesaurus for this episode, Drancer. that home game, there was elements of it. It didn't overwhelm the situation. It wasn't the only storyline, but there were certainly moments where it caught people's attention. In this moment, from a fan's perspective, if you're going to that game on Saturday against Pittsburgh with the intention of making your displeasure known, a win tonight's not changing anything, right? So that's kind of already locked in. So I don't see if they're concerned about what that's going to look like on Saturday, I think they got to know a win tonight's not going to change it, right? That's already locked in unless there's some form of communication, unless there's some form of change that happens in the interim, right? And I'm not predicting that it's going to happen Thursday or Friday in between these two games. I'm just saying this isn't a case where, hey, we can avoid an ugly scene as long as the team gets a win. I think things are well beyond that now.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I also just want to note, while the, you know, at no point was it like a common, at no point was there a common moment in which a job was called for by the fans in the arena or where it overtook like the wave does the entire game at any point on that three-game homestand. Like, those were close games and the atmosphere was still poisonous, frankly, right? Like, it felt like there was a bounce or two, that this team was a bounce or two away from getting booed off the ice. And they were, in fact, booed off the ice twice. It's just that it wasn't personalized. The signs of protest were scattered as opposed to collective, completely shared. And I've seen some sentiment that, like, oh, you know, what was threatened on Twitter didn't come to pass. And it's like, it kind of did. Like, it really was felt. You could feel it in the rink. It definitely shaped the atmosphere of those games. And the idea that, you know, you need 18,000 fans calling for one thing in unison when this team has so many issues. Like, it's unrealistic. I really don't understand that notion that, like, oh, well, you know, Twitter's not real life. Proof. It's like, no, Twitter definitely came to play, definitely had a bearing on the atmosphere of those games. One you could feel and notice in arena, and one that clearly the Canucks were aware of and did their best to manage in a variety of different ways.
And that's not getting better, right? That atmosphere is not getting better for Saturday's
game. Quite the opposite.
Again, regardless of what happens tonight. And that, to me, feels different than other similar moments in the past. And it's why I wouldn't be too concerned or too worried about whatever the result is tonight changing things. But hey, as we've said many, many times with this franchise right now, all bets are off. Someone texts in, complete systemic failure. Total failure was the word of the day, but you're close. You're close,
total.
Dexter. We appreciate it.
Complete systemic failure. I love it.
650. Lots of good texts in the inbox. We will get to as many of them as we can after the break. Lots more coming up. Plus, we'll play you back something that one of our favorites on Sportsnet 650, Yannick Hansen, had to say yesterday on the airwaves. That's coming up next. It's the Canucks Hour, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back. It's the Canucks Hour, Sportsnet 650 on your home of the Canucks. Canucks Hour is brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Being a champion takes foresight. Build your company to win for years to come with fuel-efficient and reliable Kubota skid steers, excavators, and loaders from Avenue Machinery, avenuemachinery.ca. Keep your text coming in. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. As a reminder, 4:30 puck drop against Ottawa tonight. You can hear it here, of course, on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650, pregame with the guys on the People Show, intermission and postgame with Satyar Shah and Bick Nizar. We will continue to get you set up for the game here on the Canucks Hour as well. Wanted to read a couple of texts before we get to some of the things Yannick Hansen had to say yesterday. Plenty of people agreeing with your point, Drancer, that, you know, an awful lot of Canucks go on to have some pretty good success after they leave the organization, especially recently. One unsigned text says, this goes back to Bonino, Nick Bonino. He looked like his career was over here. Then he became the best third-line center in the league. He also says, I'm not excited about losing, but it's going to, at long last, force a new GM and coach, and that's exciting if they get it right. I also wanted to read this one. Pablo from Montreal has a question. And anytime you have a question, feel free to hit us up. We'll do our best to answer it. Pablo from Montreal trying to look for some silver linings in this season, Drancer. He says, does Quinn Hughes deserve more credit for being a beast this season? He's been solid defensively, still put up a lot of points, even though the team's power play and star players haven't been going. He says he's one of the best D in the league, which I think is stretching it right now, but is overshadowed by this disaster of a team. And Drancer, for me, Quinn Hughes, he definitely deserves to be in a different category than, for example, Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser, who are just so far below their standard. It's jarring, but I also don't think we're seeing anything close to the best of Quinn Hughes so far this year.
I think Quinn Hughes has been excellent, to be totally honest with you. I think he's been absolutely exceptional. You know, the fact is, too, like, Oliver Ekman-Larsson has been the Vancouver's best defensive defenseman.
Yeah.
But there's really no question that Quinn Hughes has been the best overall defenseman on this team, and not by a little bit. I mean, he's top in almost every relevant underlying metric among players on the team or among defensemen on the team. You know, he's been scoring. You know, I agree with you, though. I think he's been great, but I don't think he's necessarily been at his absolute apex.
Yep.
As a player to this point. I think he's got another gear. I especially think he's got another gear defensively. And one thing I do think is right now, the Canucks don't have the Artem Zub, which the Ottawa Senators have, for Thomas Chabot, for Quinn Hughes. And what I mean by that is, like, a defensive-minded, top-four quality, like, credible top-four quality defenseman who can help Hughes in his own end, who can, like, stop the cycle, but also doesn't take anything off the table, or at least doesn't take as much off the table in terms of scuttering possession as certainly Tucker Pullman does, but to some extent Luke Shen and Travis Hamonic do too. And, you know, in Luke Shen's case, for example, it's the low percentage shots that are sort of, you know, a little bit mind-boggling. Like, they count as shots on the score sheet, but they're really giveaways.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, I do think that Shen would be better served, as good as that pair has been, just deferring to Hughes or sending the puck back low as opposed to putting it on net at this point, right? The Canucks just don't have a guy on the roster capable of doing what Tanev was capable of doing, which is just playing it really simple in the offensive end, being a pressure release valve with enough puck-moving intelligence to just keep possession alive to let Hughes cook. Instead, I do feel like, to some extent, there's guys who give a little bit too much back in terms of that overall puck possession or in terms of that overall game. And as such, I do think, you know, we haven't seen the best of Quinn Hughes by any means. I still think he's been phenomenal. But I do think the next gear for him to get to, I do think requires him to have a stable partner who's, like, credible top four quality on their own. I think that's a need for the Canucks, like a big picture need that this team's going to have over the next 5 years anyway, over the length of Hughes's current contract, if they're going to create an environment for him to maximize who he can be as a player, which I agree is one of the best defensemen in hockey. Right now, I'd probably say, you know, top 20.
Yes.
Right? Top 20, top 15, maybe, in and around that sort of area based on how he's performed this season, which is exceptional. Really, really good. Especially at his age as a 22-year-old. But I do think there's another gear, and I think as much as it's going to require maybe a little bit more evolution from him in terms of his defensive game, I also think it's going to come from having a partner, you know, a Mark Mathot to Erik Karlsson, a Chris Tanev to Quinn Hughes, like that type of credible top four guy on their own who's capable of, you know, just caddying caddying Hughes perhaps a little bit more effectively than Vancouver's current options.
Yeah, when I say that he's not at his peak is so high, right? You have to keep that in mind. And as you said, you know, okay, maybe he's a top 15, top 20 defenseman in the NHL right now. When you watched Quinn Hughes in his rookie year, you could so easily imagine him being a Norris candidate. And he's not at that level. He's been very good, but he's not at that level. Now, as you say, it's always hard in hockey. It is such a team sport to kind of extricate, okay, what's the individual doing versus what is his environment allowing him to do? And addressing that is going to be a key thing for the Canucks going forward. But Quinn Hughes has been really good, but I still think there's at least one more gear left for him to hit. And yeah, part of that is him. Part of that is what he has to play with. And, you know, I thought Pablo made a good point about, you know, he's still putting up his points, even though the Canucks power play hasn't necessarily been crackerjack this year. He's not getting a lot of help from Elias Pettersson, from Brock Besser on that front. So there's a lot to like from Quinn Hughes' game, but also definitely, I think, more to come for Quinn Hughes, or certainly the Canucks hope there will be more to come from Quinn Hughes down the road. Yannick Hansen, who has been generating a lot of positivity and a lot of praise, not positivity in the sense of being positive about the Canucks, but people love hearing from Yannick Hansen every time he comes on the station, Dranster. I know you're in that camp. I'm in that camp. He's on with Bick Nizar on Sportsnet Today every Tuesday. That was yesterday at 2:00. He's also on with the guys on the People Show every Friday, I believe he's on the People Show. So you get twice a week of Yannick Hansen here. Always interested in what he has to say. And I want to play a clip that he had yesterday when he joined myself and Bick Nizar on Sportsnet Today. We all talk about, okay, this team needs a new direction, right? And that's obvious, but then I think there's a really interesting question of, okay, what exactly does that direction look like? Bick asked specifically, would Yannick consider moving guys like JT Miller, like Bo Horvat, guys who are a little bit older now, this year, rather than wait until the offseason? Would that be something Yannick Hansen was interested in? Here's what he had to say about that and about the need for a direction from the Canucks.
If the ownership, the GM group decides that we're gonna retool, we're gonna try in 4 or 5 years, then trade them as soon as possible for highest possible draft pick, young players that'll fit in the age category. When we talked about it in the summer and we talked about age category, we were talking 24, 25, 26 year old players. And if what we're talking about now, then we're talking about the 20 year olds, because then we're talking down the line. And again, so then get as many draft picks as you can, see if you can turn the ship around. But again, we're looking at some very bleak seasons. And if you start shipping out Horvat, Miller, Besser, because then you're really only holding on to Quinn Hughes, Pettersson, and that age group. Demko will be the goalie 4 or 5 years from now. But you're going to need a lot of young guys then, and these guys won't be around at that point. So again, it'll be a very defined direction the team will go, I think, one way or the other. I don't think people have the stomach for more retooling, or if we tweak a little bit, maybe we will get over the hump. I think this city, the organization, they deserve success. I mean, I was lucky enough to be a part of it. Sport here in Vancouver, hockey especially, has a way of bringing people together, and it's all people talk about it with the Canucks. When the Canucks are doing well, it doesn't matter where you go. So like, I hope they find a way to turn this around one way or the other, but make it a defined way, so everybody is aware of what's going, and we're not hiding behind, okay, we squeak into the playoffs and that's good, because I feel like we, when I say we, the city deserve more. They deserve a team where you can see, okay, a championship could be on the horizon down the line.
That's the part at the end there, and that's Yannick Hansen yesterday on Sportsnet Today, here on Sportsnet 650 with myself and Bick Nizar. And that's, you know, I want to talk about the whole, okay, someone new is going to come in and look at trading veteran pieces. That's an interesting thought as well, especially, I think, coming from an ex-player like Yannick Hansen, right? Because so often ex-players are, you know, they are not the first ones to embrace the idea of rebuilding, the idea of trading assets for the future. So I think it's really interesting that Yannick Hansen is willing to have those conversations. But what he says there at the end, where it's just, the idea of setting the new direction and this city deserving to be able to see a championship on the horizon. That for me is the key more than any, okay, they have to trade Miller, they have to trade Horvat, right? I'm open to all of those discussions. I'm open to all of those ideas, but the need for clear communication and a clear direction and high standards, ultimately, and not necessarily high standards on a 1 or 2 year window, but ultimately having those really high standards, that for me is the key beyond any individual moves that might be considered. All right, sounds like we lost Drancer there. We'll get him reconnected and back on the show as soon as we can. But as I was saying, as you heard from Yannick Hansen in that clip, yeah, trading Miller, trading Bo Horvat, that should absolutely, absolutely be part of the conversation. I know those are scary conversations. Look, Bo Horvat is the captain. They made him the captain for a reason. But yes, given his contract status, given his age, given where this team is at, you have to at least be willing to consider it. You have to at least be willing to see what's out there. And Drancer, as I was saying to you, you know, yeah, I want to have those specific conversations.
I have all the time in the world. I have all the time in the world for Yannick Hansen. We called him the Honey Badger. The fan base called him the Honey Badger when he was in Vancouver as a player, but we should have called him the Truth, right? I mean, the man is, you know, he's become like one of the great truth tellers in Vancouver media takes. And, you know, I mean, so toxic, but my goodness, he is bringing it
so toxic
and bringing common sense. So toxic on an every hit basis. He is must listen radio at this point with such clear thoughts on where this club needs to go. And, you know, this market does deserve better. Like, this market does deserve better. This team is 26th in point percentage over the last 7 years. 7 years, man. And for all of that pain, for all of those losses, for all of the nights, you know, hosts where the 650 call-in shows have been filled with people upset, fans legitimately, you know, fearing for the seeming inevitability of their expiry from this mortal coil without seeing this team win a cup, right? Like, for all of that pain, for all of that anxiety, for all of that hand-wringing, what does this team have? They're a bottom five team on performance, right? They don't have a particularly robust pipeline of prospects coming. They don't have an army of draft picks waiting at their disposal. There's nothing here. You know, there's no success currently. There's no clear path to success in the future. There's no meaningful cap flexibility this summer. It's just a morass. Like, it's just a directionless mess. They are neither. You know, we get so stuck up on retooling or rebuilding or, you know, what does this team need? They need anything. Like, they need anything because currently they don't have success now. They don't have a clear path to future success. They don't have cap flexibility, draft picks, or top pro. What do you have? You have nothing. You have nothing. So, you know, the idea that there's just a couple tweaks away is ridiculous. There's nothing here. There's nothing. This team is nothing right now. And so, at least in terms of an organizational direction, it's nothing. So, you know, I hear what Yannick Hansen's saying. He's right. I'm so glad that there's voices like his calling for standards, just like normal standards, excellence, pursue excellence, you know, solve problems. Is the market high pressure? Like, is the pressure withering on players? For sure. For sure it is. But you know what? I worked in a market where down in Florida, where oftentimes the building was completely empty. And there's a negative impact of that lack of passion on a locker room too, and on your ability to recruit free agents and on your ability to build, right? You have to address it. You're not every team is dealt an equal hand, right? Some teams have low tax rates. Some teams are the New York Rangers and college free agents just want to play there. That's true too for Boston and New York. Like, there are teams that have real advantages, and Vancouver itself does have some too. You know, the pressure in the market comes attached to higher revenues, which allows them to spend to the cap every year, which allows them to spend in the American League. Like, there are advantages that the Canucks can take advantage of. If the pressure is really high on players, have a plan to address it, solve problems. You know, but more than anything, just in terms of direction, right? Just in terms of clarity, you know, and I don't think it's just a struggle to communicate with the market. And I don't think it's just that how can you communicate a plan when you don't have one? Because that's really sort of the big underlying issue here. But I also think when you don't have one and when you're not able to sell vision internally, I think that also has a big impact in terms of having players buy in, having everyone on the same page, maximizing what you're able to get out of the players on your team. Like I kind of think it all kind of comes back to a same issue, which is just like the lack of a sort of central or a centrifugal like force that kind of binds this organization and gives them any path forward. And that's where you need new leadership. You need that to be set before you can take care of all the other myriad of issues impacting this team.
And as you say, you know, you talk about the pressure in the market, right? And how that gets, I think, probably overblown in terms of, you know, the negative impact on the team. Not that to say there isn't any impact, but as you said, every market has its struggles. The other thing with that pressure is the upside for players and for ownership here is immense, right? Yes, it's really, really hard when you're losing. But as Yannick Hansen said in that clip, he's been here when the Canucks are winning, and he knows how great that feels and how incredible it feels, not just as a player, but to be in this city when the Canucks are winning. You look at how beloved the members of the 1994 team are, how beloved the members of the 2011 team are, right? Teams that ultimately fell short of the goal, but got so close and were so fun and compelling to cheer for. And I think you always, yes, there are times when the chips are down and when things aren't going well, there is going to be a lot of talk about it. There is going to be a lot of chatter. There is going to be a lot of attention. But you have to keep in mind that on the flip side, there's a bonus to all of that as well, right? There is a potential massive payoff to being able to overcome all of those things. And it's, man, if you're of a team that wins a Stanley Cup, that wins the Canucks' first Stanley Cup ever, like that is legendary status that not a lot of markets in this league can touch, right? So I think you always have to keep that in mind. Yeah, there are. It is tough sometimes to play in a Canadian market, but the potential rewards, especially in this one, are off the charts.
Not to mention that players did used to want to come to play in Vancouver. And back then, there was actually more media coverage of the team. Like there was more, the media industry was in better straits. There were more bodies in the locker room for availabilities. Like there were two newspapers with four beat writers each, three beat writers each, plus a columnist, dedicated columnist. I mean, right now the Canucks are on the road. I'm the only guy here who's not calling the games, traveling with the team. I mean, the idea that that's, you know, it's just not part of the issue. I like this from Keith the Water Guy. Drance is the problem. When he was in Florida, the Panthers sucked. He left, came to Vancouver, and now the Panthers are good, and the Canucks suck. Keith the Water Guy. Keith, the Canucks weren't good when I was in Florida, though. It's not like a perfect pendulum here. I'd suggest to you, in fact, that there might be other things going on. Like, for example, a year after I left Florida, they changed managers, and look at the impact that it had. Vancouver, meanwhile, was never good the entire time I was gone. I wonder what the common thread is. I wonder what it is. Put two and two together, Keith the Water Guy. I know you were just kidding, but
I was going to say, I'm glad you read that one, because I was gonna read that one.
It's too good. It has to be noted.
I love that he's building a case, right? He's noticed some correlation here, and now we're, you know, he's developed his hypothesis, and now we're going to test it. We'll see how it develops. Pretty good win, by the way, just as we're closing out the show here for your former team down in Florida last night. That was something else.
Tons of fun. I watched that game. And I thought early on, like, the Panthers are a new elite team, right?
Yeah.
And I thought at first they were getting sunned by like an old elite team, like a team that was like, hey, new kids, like, you can't hack it now that you're not like surprising us. You're not sneaking up on us anymore. So here's a nice pat on the head. Go your way. And then they just took over that third period. Like, that goal was so inevitable. The game winner felt so inevitable. Hornqvist hitting the post, you know, like 2 minutes earlier, they were just all over him. Loved to see it, especially from, you know, some of the guys I really loved working with down there, including, you know, Barkov and Ekblad. Great to see them having so much success, and great to see the energy in that building, right? They've built it. The fans are coming. And what was a liability for that team, right, the apathy in the market, is now something that, you know, by no means holds them back.
It's the Canucks and Senators. Puck drop is tonight at 4:30. Again, pregame coverage here on Sportsnet 650, postgame and intermissions with Sat and Bick. You can hear it all here. That's another edition of the Canucks Hour in the books. We'll be back tomorrow at 11. Don't forget, you can subscribe on Spotify, Apple, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen on demand anytime. You've got it on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.